The 50th edition of If Your Left Just Ain't Right is this week. This very show, the Chimpsy Radio Network, for now, is not going to be hosting this show. I don't know what the future holds, but this show, I guarantee you, no matter where it ends up, will not go anywhere, my friends. This week on If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right, a lot to get to as always, a new beginning. The Chimpsy Radio Network for now is not up and running, so this show has to go on because I enjoy doing it and I think it serves a purpose. And I want this show to grow. I want this show to become an important part of the political discourse in this country, and I think it can because I think I do as well or better than just about anybody you hear on the radio or commentating, certainly as well as any of the talking heads out there. So my promise is that this show will go nowhere except to a new host site or somewhere else. I'm not sure yet. But stay tuned. I'm not going anywhere. Hello again, everybody. This is Doug Hagan. You're listening to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. The 50th edition. An anniversary show, if you will. It surprised me. This is a 50th version. And I remembered I began doing this, I think, last June. So 52 weeks in a year. There you go. In a couple weeks, we will be right on the cusp of June. And I want to take the opportunity to wish David Cluster all the best and all the people at Chimpsy the best. Certainly, this is something that I wanted this show to continue on Chimpsy's radio network. It's not going to do it for now. I hope Chimpsy's comes back, and I hope I will be in some way, shape, form, or fashion a part of it. When it comes back, I would ask y'all to encourage David with your donations and prayers and support to maybe bring Chimpsy's back. We'll see what happens there. But this show, as I've said, is not going anywhere. We're going to continue. And there's a lot to get to this week, as there always is. And I had to start this week with some of the best news I've ever heard, politically speaking. Some of the best. Mike Huckabee. Mike Hokeybee, I've called him. Huckaphonia, I've called him. I've called him, well, I said he was a televangelist with better hair. I've said he's a used car salesman in a better suit. I've called him the fakest Republican on earth until Donald Trump arrived. But he made his decision about the 2012 race and whether or not he would seek the GOP nomination. And thank God above, Mike Huckabee is going to stay on Fox and do his show and play the bass and continue to try to be relevant in some way, and continue to tell people things that will never happen. But Huckabee's out. Thank you, Lord. I know a lot of conservatives out there like him, and I'm sure some of the listeners like him. I have no use for the guy. And the main reason is I think he'll say anything to get a vote, to get elected. I think it's all about him. The reason he's not running is because he's, and look, I don't blame him. He's got things going well with a Fox show, a radio show. He's doing speaking fees across the country. I don't begrudge a guy any of that stuff. Okay, I really don't. I'm just glad he's not going to try to be president, because there's a good chance he would have gotten the nomination, and there's a better than good chance that he would have said two or three more incredibly stupid things on a campaign trail and blown it and lost to Obama. I'm not Michael Medved. I'm not infatuated with Mike Huckabee. I'm not Chuck Norris. I'm not infatuated with Mike Huckabee. I think the things he said about Mitt Romney's religion were detestable, pathetic, and despicable during the 2008 campaign. I think his attacks on Fred Thompson were stupid, frankly. I'm not a Huckabee fan. And what he said about libertarians in the past, although I'm not a libertarian, I have libertarian leanings. And I think what conservatives like Huckabee, what like Michael Medved, who insist on calling libertarians losertarians, I think they do a disservice to the Republican Party. Because if you listen to most sincere, genuine libertarians, they're much closer to conservatives than they are to liberals. And if you can convince them that their best way to get their ideology in place is to vote with Republicans, that's a voting block you don't need to ignore. And I think calling them losertarians or mocking them or saying they're bad for conservatism are things I don't like, because I think libertarians get a lot of things right. Now, we often talk on this show about honor killings, Sharia law, radical Islam, as very, very dangerous things. There's a story out of India that I found on the Weasel Zippers blog. And generally speaking, these honor killings are young girls who their older brother or father, something like that, will kill them or attempt to kill them because they dishonor their religion by, well, behaving like normal human beings. This story is especially shocking because it's not the fathers or older brothers. Two Muslim mothers have been arrested in northern India for allegedly killing their grown-up daughters. The reason? They had brought dishonor to the family by marrying Hindu men. Well, what brings dishonor to a family more than a mother killing their child? I mean, seriously. You want to talk about dishonor? Zahida and Husna. Zahida was 19, Husna was 26, were strangled to death when they returned to their homes in the Bagpat town to seek peace with their families after their marriage. The Mail Today reported out of India. So they got married to Hindu men. They wanted to make peace with their families. They were doing the right thing, and I guess they should have been more cautious. The girls, who were neighbors, had fallen in love and married construction workers earlier this month. This angered their mothers, who are both widows. Maybe that's why the mothers did it. The fathers had died. Now, these two girls, the news report says, were tied to beds while they were sleeping and strangled by their mothers. "We killed them because they brought shame to our community. Kat Noon, one of the mothers, told the Indian Express newspaper, how could they elope with Hindus? They deserve to die. We have no remorse, she said. What in the hell is wrong with that? What in the hell is wrong with some people in Islam that they take the Quran and Sharia law so seriously that they will murder their family members for daring to have a mind of their own? And that's what this is about. And that's the part that drives me crazy. The mainstream media will never report this. I guarantee you, if this was were two girls who had been murdered by their Baptist or Lutheran parents or mothers for marrying someone of a different religion, this would be all over our media. This, though, it's as if the media, they're either afraid of retaliation or they're just plain out afraid that they'll be seen as intolerant. They don't want to go down that road. They're so obsessed, I suppose, with being fair to Islam. They don't want to be seen in any way as bad people. It's very sad, and it's tragic that this happens. And I really wish that the Muslims, we always hear about the majority of Muslims, y'all have to get it together and say this has to stop. If you're going to be intolerant of something, be intolerant of this. Don't be intolerant of other religions, other faiths, people who disagree with you. Be intolerant of this barbarity. This is barbarity. There is no doubt about it. This is mothers doing this to their children. This is unspeakably evil. And it's the majority of Muslims have to get it together and put a stop to this. Now, speaking of radical Muslims, you may or may not have heard the news story about American Airlines Flight 1561. Now, something happened on that plane, and Michelle Malkin has written about it, and written about the media downplaying of what really happened. Michelle writes, if you listen to the passengers and crew who flew on American Airlines Flight 1561 last weekend, there's no doubt about what happened on their harrowing trip. A Yemeni man shrieking Allah Akbar, sound familiar? That's what terrorists yell before they blow themselves up or commit attacks and atrocities on civilians. It means God is great in their perverse words. But a Yemeni man shrieking Allah Akbar at the top of his lungs more than 30 times rushed the cockpit door twice, intending to take down the plane and kill everyone on board. The clammy, sweaty, lone male passenger exhibited classic symptoms of what Middle East caller and Arthur Daniel Pipes has dubbed sudden jihadi syndrome, a seemingly random outbreak of threatening behavior or violence by a hysterical Muslim adherent who had not previously exhibited signs of Islamic radicalization. It took at least 4 men to tackle and restrain Raja Ahmad Muhammad al-Morisi. There was no question in everyone's mind that he was going to do something, passenger Angelina Marty told the San Francisco Chronicle. And know that something did not mean enlisting his fellow flyers in a mid-air flash mob performance of the Hallelujah chorus, Malkin jokes. Now, here's the thing. This happened. We've seen 9/11. We know we had the shoe bomber. We had the underwear bomber. We know that radical jihadists have attempted to turn planes into weapons and commit horrific terrorist acts. But there's still some people that don't want to get it. They don't want to accept reality. Malkin writes, bleeding heart sympathizers seriously speculated that al-Morisi had simply mistaken clearly marked lavatory doors for the clearly marked cockpit doors. Because, she says, you know, it's normal to shout God is great repeatedly just before you're relieving yourself as your plane is about to land. I mean, you must really have to go in the worst possible way to go that far with it. Some federal authorities and media whitewashers proclaimed that Almarisi's motives were unknown. Well, I guess if you want to be specific about it, they may not know the specific reasons he wanted to commit jihad and murder hundreds of people. But he wanted to commit murder and jihad and kill hundreds of people. So to call it unknown is disingenuous. Malkin continues, if only Almarisi had been screaming phrases from the Constitution. The selective motive determination machine, the same one that rushed to pin the Tucson massacre on the Tea Party, the GOP and Fox News without a shred of evidence, would have kicked into full gear. Now, this jihadist has been denied bail by a San Francisco judge. That kind of surprises me, knowing a lot of San Francisco judges. Unburdened by the paralyzing prissiness of political correctness, federal prosecutors noted that Alia Akbar was the same refrain invoked by the 9/11 hijackers over Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and by the would-be Christmas Day bomber over Detroit, not to mention Fort Hood jihadist Nidal Hassan, the Frankfurt, Germany jihadist who killed two U.S. airmen on a bus in March, the young Portland, Oregon Christmas tree lighting bomb plotter, every last suicide bomber across Europe, Africa, South Asia, and the Middle East, and every last evil Al-Qaeda beheader broadcast on video over the past decade. Again, Alia Akbar is kind of a big clue. But some people don't want to get it. And again, this hypersensitivity, this obsessive compulsion the left has with being equal. Everything's equal. You can't possibly blame it on the religion, because then you would be insisting that other religions are superior because the people that practice those religions don't have such a propensity to commit such acts. Sorry, Western culture is better. Christianity, Judaism are better. If you don't like it, tough. I don't care. That's just reality. Because, you know, you just don't have a lot of Christians yelling praise Jesus before they try to blow up planes or behead people or kill people or light themselves on fire, light their shoes on fire, blow up a bomb in their underwear, or trying to do anything else that other terrorists do. It just doesn't happen. Now, the second question Malkin gets into is, how did this asshat get into the country? And on a plane? You know, we have those enhanced pat-downs now. How could he possibly have escaped the scrutiny? Well, he had no keys, no luggage, $47 in cash, two curious posted checks totaling $13,000, and a trove of expired and current state IDs from New York and California, where relatives said he had not notified them that he was coming. He's young, he's male, brought no family with him, had no job or other discernible income, and hails from the terror-coddling nation of Yemen. Yes, the same Yemen that is Osama bin Laden's ancestral home. Harbors al-Qaeda operatives who are burning the torch of jihad, and is deemed a special interest country whose citizens warrant increased scrutiny by the Department of Homeland Security when they cross the border illegally. So what happened? Look, Michelle points out, last month, a federal watchdog revealed that TSA's counterterrorism specialist failed to detect 16 separate jihad operatives who moved through target airports on at least 23 different occasions. Neutered by Islamophobia and an overtime, over-security mentality, our State Department consular offices and airline security bureaucracy stance toward the Almarisi slipping through their snaking lines is nothing to see here. Just move along. Let the TSA agent pat you down. We have to get serious about this. Because again, these plots have been stopped by what? Malfunctioning? Alert passengers? In this case, it was people on the flight who learned and took this guy out, took this guy down. That's what happened in this case. And folks, it's just a matter of time before the right things don't happen. And someone, one of these monsters, actually carries out the act they're trying to carry out. And then, of course, Janet Napolitano will probably use that to have TSA agents doing all sorts of other things that won't really stop a terror attack. Because she's one of the fools that just won't get it. And speaking of not getting it, Doug Powers has a piece. A story really disturbing to me. Now, listen to what the Fourth Amendment says. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That, again, is the Fourth Amendment. The Indiana Supreme Court has apparently, at least three members, three of those justices, have never read that. Because they have ruled that the Fourth Amendment needs a disclaimer when it comes to an officer of the law acting unlawfully. At which point, Powers points out, by definition, wouldn't they cease to be an officer of the law? Now, Bruce McQueen wrote about this. This is what the Indiana Supreme Court decided in what would be a laughable finding if it weren't so serious, overturning a common law dating back to the English Magna Carta, 1215, the Indiana Supreme Court ruled Thursday that Hoosiers have no right to resist unlawful police entry into their homes. Excuse me? Are you telling me a cop can bust down your door, no probable cause, no warrant, no nothing? And you don't have a right in Indiana to say, what the hell? This is my home. There's a Fourth Amendment. We don't live in a dictatorship. The author of the story reporting this is right. Somehow, the Indiana Supreme Court managed in one fell swoop to overturn almost 900 years of precedent. In a 3-2 decision, Justice Stephen David, who wrote for the court, said if a police officer wants to enter a home for any reason, or no reason at all, a homeowner cannot do anything to block the officer's entry. So in other words, your home is no longer your home. This comes from this case. A jury convicted a Richard Barnes of Class A misdemeanor battery on a law enforcement officer. Class A misdemeanor resisting law enforcement and Class B misdemeanor disorderly conduct. Barnes contested the trial court's failure to advise the jury on the right to reasonably resist unlawful entry by police officers constituted reversible error and that the evidence was insufficient to sustain his convictions. We hold that there is no right to reasonably resist unlawful entry by police officers. We further hold that the evidence was sufficient and affirm Barnes' convictions. We believe, however, he continues, that a right to resist an unlawful police entry into a home is against public policy and is incompatible with modern Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. In other words, that's how we think the Fourth Amendment now. Forget what those founders wrote and said. Nowadays, an aggrieved arrestee has means available at common law for redress against unlawful police action. This is incredible. They're saying that a police officer breaking the law, unlawful, they say that is no reason. You have no justification for reasonably defending yourself. Part of the other statement was that this might increase the risk of violence or someone getting hurt. Well, I mean, look, folks, if you cannot defend your own home against unlawful entry by anyone, look, the police have so many ways to legally, if there's a legitimate purpose, there's no problem. And a police officer acting unlawfully should be convicted of whatever they did, maybe kicked off the force, suspended, whatever the punishment would be. But you don't take the rights, the judge can't take away rights that God gave. But he can, these three justices can, in this case, in the state of Indiana, say, we don't choose to honor those rights. You talk about a scary state, a nanny state. That's not good. I'll tell you something else that isn't good. The National Labor Relations Board. You might have never heard of this entity. Another thing in our government that needs to go away, needs to be done away with. Boeing had decided to put a new facility in South Carolina. They were going to build a new type of jet. So what could be the problem? Good, Boeing, big, huge company, more jobs for South Carolinians, good for the economy. Sounds good, right? But no. You see, Boeing building this new jet aircraft called the Dreamliner. It's a mid-sized jet, has fuel efficiency and range of heavy transporters. The airplane will use 20% less fuel for comparable missions than today's similarly sized airplanes. Hell, it's even better for the environment, according to the environmentalists. It will also travel at speeds that match today's fastest widebodies, Mach 0.85. Dreamliner takes advantage of a number of design advances using unibody mainframe that greatly reduces the number of parts to be fastened together and opens up more room in its interior. The plane will have more cargo revenue capacity and will also feature improvements in passenger comforts, such as maintaining higher humidity in its interior. The plane is currently being produced at maximum capacity in Washington State. To increase production, in other words, to get more planes out, Boeing chose to expand their facility in South Carolina. Over a year and a half after Boeing had announced those plans to build a plant in the state of South Carolina, and with the $2 billion plant almost completed, the National Labor Relations Board has charged that Boeing's decision violated the rights of its unionized workers in Washington State. The charge goes straight to the heart of the struggle for freedom against an overreaching federal bureaucracy. Now, that was taken from the What the blog. So you get the National Labor Relations Board saying, no, you can't have a plant there because it's unfair to union workers. Now, George Will wrote about this, and George Will is a guy I sometimes agree with, sometimes I think he's a stuffed shirt elitist snob. But this case, he's dead on right. The NLRB has read a 76-year-old statute, the 1935 Wagner Act, perversely disregarded almost half a century of NLRB and Supreme Court rulings and patently misrepresentative statements by Boeing officials. South Carolina is one of 22 so far right-to-work states where workers cannot be compelled to join a union. In other words, states that honor freedom. You can't be forced to join a union you don't want to join. In September 2009, Boeing South Carolina workers' fuselage selections, sections of 787s already are built there, voted to end their representation by IAM, the union did not accuse Boeing of pre-vote misbehavior. So these workers said, we don't want to be part of this union anymore. Workers chose freedom of choice, something the left is supposed to stand for. Now, however, the NLRB seeks to establish the principle that moving businesses to such states from non-right-to-work states constitutes prima facie evidence of unfair labor practices, including intimidation and coercion of labor. Well, look, coercion of labor, intimidation, that sounds like forcing people to join unions they don't want to. That sounds like the intimidation and coercion part of this. This principle would be a powerful incentive for new companies to locate only in right-to-work states. So what we have here is the National Labor Relations Board trying to strong-arm Boeing and say, well, if you go there, that's a right-to-work state. And you also operate in a state that doesn't honor right-to-work. The unions were a good thing at once. But now, increasingly, they're political tools, as we've seen with the SEIU and others, and their ties to the Obama administration. This is pathetic. You know, this is the time the president will stand up and say, wait a minute. A real president right now will stand up and say, wait a minute. There's nothing wrong here. The National Labor Relations Board needs to go away, period, as I said. But again, we have a president that's in deep debt to unions, I believe, and that's part parcel of what he is, this union thuggery. And it's a shame that these jobs now hang in the balance for these people in South Carolina. And again, for these workers who chose by their own vote not to be part of a union anymore, that's their business, that's their choice. Workers should be free to join and form unions and to leave them if they wish. Now some music. Y'all enjoy this one. Don Henley, I Will Not Go Quietly. I'll be back.
And drown, but oh no, baby, I won't give up that easy, no. Too many tired tracks in the sands of time, too many love affairs that stop on a dime. Well, oh baby, think it's time to make some change now, yeah. Clay, whose mighty ships have sprung a leak, and I want you to tell me, darling, just what do you believe in now? Well, come on over here, baby, about to give me a heart attack. Wanna wrap my loving arms around the small of your back, yeah, I wanna pull you, pull you, pull you, pull you right up close to me, yeah. Check it out. Tones in this town. Ooh, baby, just wanna take you away from here. Ain't no tiger, ain't no little lamb. Suppose you tell me, mama, who do you think I think I am? And oh, baby, don't you give a damn. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. Don Henley, good stuff from him. Let's talk about another form of music, if you want to call rap music, which I don't. But there was a dust-up over a poetry event the White House had, and they invited, well, one lady, I believe Jill Scott's her name, that has written and been sad about interracial dating. She hates when black men marry white women. It hurts her soul, I believe were her words. So you've got a racial separatist, a racist, invited to the White House. And now you have this rapper called Common. And Brent Rozelle at Newsbusters wrote a little piece about him. Common, whose real name is Lonnie Rashid Lynn Jr. Now, the left celebrates him as socially conscious, a street poet, but that's not what was seen by cops in New Jersey. ABC reporter Jake Tapper blogged that Dave Jones, president of the New Jersey State Trooper Fraternal Association, was contacted by the White House about trooper objections to this appearance. Obama officials claimed they'd never heard of Joanne Chesimard, who renamed herself Asata Shakur, a woman Common celebrated in a song. Funny how people that change their name to Muslim names tend to be radical, isn't it? Amazing how that works out. Now, who is this woman? She is a domestic terrorist who wrapped her criminality and her abhorrent antisocial behavior in a cause to try to disguise her disgust for America in this make-believe 1960s radicalism, Jones explained. In 1973, she executed State Trooper Werner Forster with his own gun after he was already shot and didn't represent a threat to anyone. After she shot him, she kicked him in the head to the point that hours later, after he was picked up, his brain was still part of the remnants on her shoe. This is who Common celebrates, this socially conscious street poet. Now, he wrote a song for Asada, claiming that this queen of the Black Liberation Army was innocent. Asada has been convicted of a murder she couldn't have done, Common rapped. Medical evidence shown she couldn't have shot the gun. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this shit so we could be free. The song also features CeeLo Green, someone else I've never heard of. He raps, "I'm thinking of Asada, yeah. Listen to my love, Asada, yeah. We're molded from the same mud, Asada. We share the same blood, Asada, yeah. Your power and pride so beautiful. May God bless your soul. May God bless your soul. She's a cold-hearted, cold-blooded, cop-killing piece of human filth. And so are you, CeeLo Green, for celebrating her. And you too, Common, whatever the hell your real name is." Just another thug rapper who, for whatever reason, this culture celebrates on an increasing level. People with no talent musically, and apparently no real social conscience or moral compass at work. Now, in 1977, Chesimard was found guilty of first-degree murder, assault and battery of an officer, assault with a dangerous weapon, and assault with intent to kill, illegal possession of a weapon, and armed robbery. She was given life in prison. In November of 79, she escaped from prison and made her way to her revolutionary paradise in Cuba. Since May 2, 2005, the FBI has classified her as a domestic terrorist and offered a $1 million reward for assistance in her capture. I'd love to see them send the SEALs to take that murderous woman out. Common, Bozell writes, is also a champion of another convicted cop killer. Who would have guessed? Mumia Abu Jamal, again, another Muslim name, also a radical cause celebrate. In a deaf poetry jam rhyming session, Common declared, "We all children of Allah, keep on, flyers say, free Mumia on my freezer." Wow, that's really, really profound musical talent. So I guess Common's a Muslim too, if he's saying we're all children of Allah. Not that that really matters, except that the connection with jihad and Sharia and terror acts to people with that kind of name who turn against America. Now, this isn't all the problems with Common, who again was invited by the White House to be part of this poetry session. Listen to what he opined in a song about President Bush back in 2007. With what happening? Why are they messing with Saddam? Burn a Bush because for peace, he no push, no button. Killing over oil and grease, no weapons of destruction. How can we follow a leader when this a corrupt one? Good Lord. Go back to first grade and start grammar, first off, Mr. Common. But again, nothing wrong with Saddam Hussein. Nothing wrong with comp killers. Now, why wouldn't this guy be welcome to the White House? Look who we have as president. We have a radical in the White House who probably, from all intents I can see, hates America. So why wouldn't he invite other American haters there? And I don't believe this, that the White House just didn't know. And if they didn't know when it was brought their attention, why didn't they say, you know what, this guy didn't need to be here? Why don't they, you know, actually look at people and say, that's not the kind of person that really represents America, but maybe Common represents the Obama administration. That's the scary part. And Bozell continues, this controversy underlines a real weakness in the president's criticism of violent rap lyrics. During the 2008 campaign, Obama signaled his fandom and support for gangster rapper Jay-Z, telling an interviewer his American Gangsta album was tight. In Rolling Stone, Obama lauded violence-threatening rapper Ludacris as one of several great talents and great businessmen. He conceded he was troubled sometimes by the misogyny and materialism in rap lyrics and added, it would be nice if I could have my daughters listen to their music without me worrying that they're getting bad images of themselves. Gee, you think, Mr. President? The more we know about this president, the more warning signs we get. Now, as I said last week, I am supporting Herman Cain for president. And I want to point out something the media is going to try to do. They're going to try to omit Herman Cain, not talk about him, not cover him, because he has the ability to really take Obama apart, I think. Mark Halpern is Time Magazine's political expert. And he had a chart recently giving odds on candidate for the 2012 Republican nomination. He didn't list Herman Cain. Now, why he wouldn't, I don't know. I would say it's probably because he's an elitist and Cain is starting to get traction with the American people, starting to really connect. He's not your typical politician, so people like Halpern don't consider those credible candidates or candidates with a chance of winning. But this is part of the effort of the mainstream media to dismiss Herman Cain. They do not want Herman Cain to be the Republican nominee. A well-spoken candidate like he is, who connects with people, a Tea Party favorite, a guy who really gets it, a very successful businessman. And you know what? If Herman Cain gets a nomination, the media and the Obama administration and Democrats will never be able to play their precious race card, will they? Because they'll be playing it against a black man. Now, let me change gears and talk about something else here for a second. There's a school teacher who has done something offensive. And isn't it amazing that liberals do things so as not to offend or possibly offend those one or two people that might be offended by a seemingly harmless act, and in the process they offend millions of people? An 11-year-old boy in Orange, Massachusetts, also known as Taxachusetts, drew and colored a picture of the American flag in his elementary school art class. Seems pretty normal to me. Seems like something kids might do all across this country. The boy is Frankie Girard. His teacher refused to allow him to hang it on the wall alongside the other students' drawings. The reason? It might offend another student. So here's what liberals do. They say, little Frankie, you might offend somebody with that drawing of the American flag. Now, forget that anybody offended by the American flag is a pinhead and needs to have their head examined. Forget that they need to get over themselves. We're going to offend you because you're not as important as they are. The whiners and the malcontents in this country are now more important to liberals. They might be offended. So not to offend the malcontents, the miscreants, the abnormal people, we're going to offend the normal people. That's what political correctness is all about. Now, this has created a civil rights controversy in Orange, with the news media getting into the act and the school trying to explain it away. Well, there's no explanation. The teacher has his bias, or he's afraid of offending someone, whatever the case may be. The teacher doesn't need to be a teacher. Okay? It's that serious. Because to say to one student, you know, that might offend somebody, you shouldn't do it, is different when you're talking about art. Okay, everyone draws something. When I hang these pictures up that everyone drew, it'd be one thing if Frankie Girard drew a picture of a naked woman. It'd be different if he drew a picture of you know, sex act or, you know, something like that. But he drew a picture of the American flag. And his pinhead teacher thought took it upon themselves to say, now that might offend someone. Can you see this happening 40, 50 years ago? No, I can't either. This is just out of bounds with reality to me. It's one of those stories that drives you crazy because you hate for it to happen, but especially to a kid. You hate to see kids punished for doing the right thing or just expressing themselves. And isn't what the left always says? Don't let people express themselves. Don't punish them for their beliefs. Don't unless they are conservative, or unless they are a patriotic person. Then it might offend someone. So we can't let them do that anymore. Now, a couple more stories before I get to my weird sex stories. Bill Clinton, you remember him? He was president. Get a blowjob in the White House. Thankfully for him, it wasn't from Hillary. Well, according to Politico, Bill Clinton doesn't like all the misinformation and rumors floating around the internet. And he thinks the United Nations or the U.S. government should create an agency to do something about it. Now, stop right there. The United Nations, if the United Nations came to change your tire, it would probably take 5 years, cost $20 million, and several human rights violations would be committed along the way. The United Nations is the useless nations. Why anyone would look to the UN to do anything is beyond me. Set aside the fact that the United Nations, the U.S. government, really has no business telling people what they can say on the internet. It's called freedom of speech, Bill. Look it up. It would be a legitimate thing to do, Clinton said in an interview airing on Friday on CNBC. The agency, Clinton said, would have to be totally transparent about where the money came from. Yeah, because transparency is such part of the Obama administration now. It's not going to be transparent. Bill is smarter than this. He doesn't like some of the things being exposed about liberalism on the internet, on blogs especially, and he would like to see them silenced. That's just it. But he did say that this agency would have to be independent because if it's a government agency in a traditional sense, it would have no credibility whatsoever, particularly with a lot of people who are the most active on the internet. Let's say the U.S. did it. It would have to be an independent federal agency that no president could countermand or anything else, because people would think you were just censoring the news and giving different falsehood out. Well, Bill, that's what it would be. You know it would be political. You know it would be partisan. You know it would be, this is the best part for you, Bill, anti-conservative, anti-Republican. Then he had the audacity to say this. That is, it would be like, I don't know, National Public Radio or BBC or something like that. Yeah, because NPR is so reliable and so nonpartisan, Bill. The liberal lefts, folks. The liberal left, they want transparency. They really are transparent. You just have to study them a little bit to know they're full of baloney. Now, it's come to this. Jill of the Pundit and Pundit blog writes, Budget cuts have gone so far, they're threatening something that I think all of us should be horrified by. I think this is too horrific to consider. The renowned San Francisco Mine Troop would be likely not be able to survive solely on ticket sales. Well, I'm stunned. You mean people aren't lining up around the corner to buy tickets to mimes, to watch mimes? Now, if you sold tickets and allowed people to beat mimes with sticks, you would have a line around probably four city blocks. Five in southern states. But why should the federal... Look, if no one wants to watch mime troops perform, why should the government give them money to stick around? If you can't survive in the marketplace, there's a reason. I mean, there's a reason Air America went away. Because not enough people listened. They couldn't generate enough revenue. They couldn't generate an audience. And mime troops, I don't think they're very popular, apparently. Now, but there's something deeper here. There's a deeper threat than just the mimes. It starts with the mimes. This is like Hitler ran Germany, and their liberal will tell you. He started with the mimes first. If we lack the will to defund mimes, however, renowned, it's time for America to raise a white flag. We're done, Jello Pines. That's true. But, you know what else may be defunded? The Accordion Festival in San Francisco. Oh, God, not the Accordion Festival, not that anything. Oh, God. How would we survive without mimes and accordions? Or mimes playing accordions? Or porn featuring mimes and accordions? Although that might not be publicly funded. I'm not sure about that. But you see, these things should never be funded by the federal government anyway. If the state of California, the city of San Francisco wanted to, I guess that's fine if they had enough stupid people willing to vote for such a stupid thing. But again, these are things we don't need in this country. And if we do need them, let the marketplace decide. Get the federal government out of our pockets. We've got a huge $14 trillion deficit. You think that defunding this stuff will cure that? No. And like I've said before on the show, it's a culture. We've got to get rid of the entitlement and dependency culture and a culture among our politicians that they can only get reelected by giving people things. And you only get that money by stealing it from people who actually earn it. And that is crushing our economy. Now, the two weird sex stories. You remember the royal weddings? Kate Middleton married that prince guy with the funny red coat. Well, she has a younger sister, Pippa, I believe is how you pronounce her name. And Pippa Middleton created quite a buzz because she looked good in the dress she had on wedding day. Very nice figure. And especially attractive was her behind. I know I've offended feminists, but good. I like to offend feminists. But Pippa's butt was rocking that dress. That's just the way it is. But there's a fellow in England that, he told his girlfriend he preferred the derriere of Pippa Middleton to her derriere. Guess he has a derriere preference. Well, his girlfriend got back at him. Because on the driver's side of his vehicle, which wasn't a good-looking vehicle to begin with, and there's a picture of this at the Mail Online if you want to go see, but there's this ugly little blue car, and in white spray paint is written across the windows and across the driver's side door, "Is Pippa's butt still better than mine?" followed by three question marks. Fellas, if your girlfriend or wife asks you, does her butt look better than mine? First place, you can't answer it correctly, because if you say, of course not, they'll say you're lying. And they'll get mad at you. If you say, oh, it's about the same, they'll say, you're lying, make a choice. And if you dare say, of course it is, or yes, I think it is, well, then you're going to spray paint your ugly car and make it even uglier. That's sad. Women just shouldn't be that petty and spiteful. Really, ladies, don't ask questions like that. You put us in an impossible spot. Now, I close with a story I found on the Other McCain blog. From Sonoma, California. I don't have a weird sex story from Florida this week. I think that's the first week ever. But a crime has been committed in Sonoma, California. A crime so unspeakable that, well, only perverts on the internet like myself and Robert Stacy McCain will talk about it. Blind man, this is a headline. I didn't make it up. Don't blame me. I don't get paid to write these things. I didn't yap about them on this show. Blind man confused over mystery enema. Two words that should never go together are mystery and enema. There's other words that shouldn't go together, but mystery and enema probably should never go together. But veteran police officers have been left dumbfounded after a partially sighted man claimed a woman entered his apartment, gave him an enema, and promptly left. The 53-year-old California man answered the door to a woman who claimed she was there to give him an enema. These things just don't happen to me, thank God. As the man had recently undergone intestinal surgery, he assumed the visit was part of his rehab and allowed the woman into his home to perform the procedure. The woman took him into the bedroom, had him drop his trousers and lie face down on the bed before she performed the enema in less than 2 minutes. She was from Enema Express, apparently. I think they have a drive-through service now. Good grief. A day later, 24 hours later, it hits this guy that, you know, I wonder about this. Doesn't quite make sense. You think he would have thought about that sooner. But he contacted the Sonoma Police Department to report the incident. The investigating officer contacted the man's doctor and was told that an enema had not been prescribed, ordered, or approved. Due to the condition of the man's eyesight, he was unable to offer police a description of the mystery woman, and she left no clues to her identity at the scene. Sonoma police have now turned this case over to the Domestic and Sexual Assault Unit of Sonoma Sheriff's Office, who have yet to make sense of the incident. Well, I think there's some things you probably just can't make sense of. The Obama economic policy and mystery enemas by strange women who commit them on blind men. Folks, that is the show for this week. Again, thank you to David Clutcher, all the great people at Chimpsies for the opportunities. I will talk to y'all next week and give you updates as they come on this show and where it's going to be, perhaps on Blog Talk Radio, perhaps somewhere else. We'll see as that comes down the pipe. But this show will go on. I appreciate your listening. Good night. God bless. Remember, if you're left, you just ain't right. And a little over 3 months to football season. And you know what that means? That means go Gators. Y'all have a good one.